with your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. A Journal reporter who covers the Federal Reserve got a one-on-one interview with FOMC member James Bullard. You'll hear why Wall Street likes what Bullard had to say. That's next. First, these money and market stories you should know. The Wall Street Journal Real Estate Bureau reports on two townhouses in New York City's Harlem neighborhood asking a record $27 million. The two homes, which are 9,000 square feet each, could be combined into one mega mansion. The two houses were formerly members of the Dwight Mansion, named for John Dwight, the founder of the company that created Arm & Hammer baking soda. The Journal also reports on the growing conflict over college debt intensifying among American families. Tuition increases have outpaced household incomes, just as parents are facing myriad financial obligations, including supporting their own parents, saving for retirement, health care costs, and sometimes their adult children's living expenses. A recent Sallie Mae survey says that parents currently saving for their children's college believe they'll be able to cover 37% of the cost from savings. But parents who are paying for children already in college actually cover just 10% from savings. And while there's plenty of reporting on college loan programs and grants for low-income students, oftentimes forgotten is the number of college students who struggle to buy food. A study by the Government Accountability Office says that about 2 million students on college campuses may be going hungry and do not have access to or are not familiar with resources like food stamps, and that could be forcing them to leave college without graduating. The first ever study of its kind says more than half of college students who list risk factors for what is known as food insecurity did not participate in assistance programs. And as of September of 2018, more than 650 colleges have or plan to launch food pantries for students. As recently as November, the Federal Reserve was expected to raise interest rates as many as four times this year. But in light of stock market volatility and wavering economic indicators, that's been dialed back to two. But is two too many? It is in the eyes of at least one voter on the Federal Open Market Committee. And Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Derby is on the line with us with details. So, Michael, you spoke with James Bullard. He's the chairman of the St. Louis Fed. He has a voting role on the FOMC, and he feels, in terms of interest rates, the status quo so far is just fine.
Yeah, Mr. Bullard has long, actually for several years, been arguing against interest rate rises, believing that if there's not that much inflation pressure in the economy, and basically the overall inflation gauges show that inflation has been at best at the Fed's 2% target, but mostly below it, he hasn't really seen any justification for raising rates. And so what's happened is what he fears now is if the Fed does go forward with more interest rate rises, he's worried that that might actually be the thing that, you know, he doesn't specify how many rate rises it would need to be, but he's worried that continuing to do interest rate increases could actually send the economy into recession. And what's been interesting about where Mr. Bullard is, because, you know, as I just suggested, he's been opposed to these rate rises for a long time. Over the last few days, a number of Fed officials have shifted in his direction. And that caution that that uncertainty about the outlook you alluded to in your opening, that's caused a whole bunch of Fed officials to also go and say, like, hey, maybe it's time to be patient. You know, we have the collective assessment is for two rate rises this year. But now you see Fed officials saying we've got a while to take stock of things, see if the market views right, see if our view is right. So another Fed official who had been actually fairly hawkish, Boston Fed leader Eric Rosengren, he talked about how he wanted more interest rate rises than all of his colleagues. Even today, in his speech today, he backed off and said, we have time to be patient and take stock before we do anything else.
Well, if you're on Wall Street or an investor, the cautious track, at least in the eyes of two of the FOMC members, the cautious track they'd like to see the Fed take going forward, well, that's got to be good news.
Yeah, and there's even another Fed official, the Chicago Fed President Charles Evans, who's also getting a voting role in the FOMC this year. Like Mr. Rosengren, Mr. Evans has been pretty hawkish for quite a while about monetary policy. And he also reiterated the message that we have nothing that is pushing us to do anything right now. So let's just be patient and take stock. before we decide whether or not we need to raise rates again. You know, bottom line for Mr. Rosengren and for Mr. Evans, they still remain fairly optimistic about the outlook, and they still do think at some point they do seem to lean that the Fed's going to be able to do it.
There's a very interesting note in your story from your interview with Bullard, and that is he feels the market has been more accurate in predicting the track of the economy than the Fed.
Mr. Bullard has consistently placed a lot of emphasis on market-based indicators of the economy. You know, when he's trying to look forward and figure out what the economy is going to do, there's all sorts of different ways you can do that. You can look at surveys that economists have made, all sorts of things like that. Well, what Mr. Bullard likes to do is look at what markets are pricing for in the future. When he tries to get a sense of whether or not people think inflation is going to go up or down, he looks to inflation expectations data from the markets. And so he's pointed out that, you know, we've had a lot of points over the last few years where markets and the Fed have had pretty divergent outlooks for the future. And, you know, eventually those things have to reconcile. But he's saying that over time, over the last, you know, a good number of years, it's the Fed view. It's the market's view on what monetary policy will do that is actually proven to be more accurate. And right now we have financial markets that expect no rate rises. And even at various points, they've even priced in Fed rate cuts, you know, somewhere out in the later year. And Mr. Bullard would like his colleagues to pay more attention to what the market is telling them.
And the FOMC members, of course, have a vote, and we see the vote count when the Fed announces interest rate moves. But what is the relationship between the FOMC members and the Fed chairman, in this case, Jerome Powell, in terms of the sway that they have? Short of a vote, their sentiment, does that typically have a lot of sway within the Fed offices?
Well, you know, as we always know when we take stock of this, all Fed officials contribute in FOMC deliberations. So whether or not you have a vote, you still get to make your piece and say what you want to say about, you know, what you think monetary policy should do. But the voting role does sort of shine a spotlight on the people that have it. So when every year, when the new it's a complicated dynamic that determines who gets a vote, but when the new class of voters rotates in, it just shines a spotlight on those people's views. And, you know, and it does. It's another thing for the chairman to manage as the chairman is trying to, you know, forge a consensus about monetary policy. And at the Fed in particular, having a consensus view on changing monetary policy based on a broad consensus is important. So, you know, there have been times when we've seen lots of dissents, especially during the financial crisis, but that's a pretty rare thing to see on the, you know, at the Fed. So, you know, when you see all the voters tilting in a certain way, it does help add a little extra emphasis on the idea that that might actually be the way that the Fed goes.
And then aside from interest rates, Bullard said the Fed should maintain its balance sheet reduction plan.
He also made the point, and I didn't put it in the story just because there's only so much you can put in a story, that he never wanted the Fed to be doing what it's doing right now with the sort of automatic roll-off of its balance sheet. He actually always preferred a more dynamic thing where the Fed would change the pace of runoff, much like it changes short-term interest rates. But he acknowledges he didn't win that debate. For now, he thinks that just keeping things on autopilot, it's what people expect. It's not an issue. So he'd like to, from what I've seen, almost all of his colleagues right now would like to keep the balance sheet runoff on autopilot. I suppose it's an effort not to add an additional complication to an already pretty complex landscape.
That is Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Derby. You can read all about his interview with James Bullard in his story on WSJ.com or the WSJ app. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.